All right, part two. I'm like a glass into this bourbon and feeling woozy because we're day drinking. Let's stop talking about business and start talking about TCM. This is part two of the discussion with Patrick. Here we switch from talking to business to talking more about actual Chinese medicine and some of our unusual theories about the medicine. And we also get into dry needling and if that's going to destroy our profession. But at this point, I was pretty tipsy from all the bourbon, so I hope this footage is still usable, but enjoy. Do you have any weird Chinese medicine theories, like unconventional things?
I feel like I do, but you're gonna have to drag them out of me.
Okay, so I guess let me start out with like where this came from. Is basically I was getting a lot of questions about the order of the six channels, because the way it's taught in acupuncture and the way it's taught in herbs is different. So in acupuncture, we're talking about the physiological depth of the channels, Tai Yang, Shao Yang, Yang Ming, Tai Yin, Shao Yin, Jue Yin. But in herbs, we say it differently, but that's just because instead of talking about physiological depth, we're talking about the order in which cold damage penetrates the sixth level. So there it's Tai Yang, Yang Ming, Shao Yang, Tai Yin, Shao Yin, Jue Yin. And so that created a lot of confusion. It turns out both of them are written down in the Neijing. But then I went and started looking at Ma Qiuqia.
Oh, God.
And he has a book where he says that the yin channels, it's Tai Yin, Jue Yin, Shao Yin. And he has Jue Yin as the pivot and Shao Yin as the terminal channel. And I couldn't figure out why he was doing this. And eventually, like, I started Googling and I found a blog post where he explained why he thought this way. And basically, it was like, I know that the Neijing literally says it this way.
But I had a feeling.
But in my opinion, Jue Yin is actually the pivot. And then he gave some arguments as to why he thought that. And I was like, I don't really agree with any of these. And it kind of made me angry because I was like, I have really weird opinions about the classics and about Chinese medicine. But I don't actually publish them in textbooks that go out to like...
Yeah, exactly. It's less dangerous.
That are used by the entire Western world. So then I started thinking about like, what are some of the weird opinions I have about TCM? And I didn't know if you have some of those, or if not, I'll share with you some of mine and you can critique them.
Please, begin sharing and let me... So the one you brought up, I think, is already super interesting. And I think that there's a lot there. You know, I'm in that school of thought where you cannot apply herbal theory to acupuncture theory. That for me is like, it's separation of church and state.
Oh, that's interesting. Is that like a Zong Fu versus channels, or is that?
Yeah, right. Okay. So I'm like when it comes to acupuncture, I have like acupuncture mind, and that's like really channel theory kind of thing. And then it is completely separated for like, there is, in my mind, there is no Guizhi acupuncture point kind of situation. And I can see where the channel differentiation that you have to do with herbs, it should be completely different. My analogy for this is like, you know, lemon juice is acidic, but it has an alkalinizing effect on the body.
Okay, yeah.
And I feel like when you drink the herbs, right, when you put the herbs in your body, the herb has a nature in the universe outside of you, but it obviously does something when it's inside of you. And maybe we have to change the approach of the channel theory for that. I can get behind that idea.
Yeah. So with the six levels, it's like, I actually had to look into this because it's actually stated both ways in the Neijing, where there's one part where it's talking about, presumably about the channels, where it says like Tai Yang opens to the exterior, Yang Ming closes to the interior, and Shao Yang is the pivot. Or really it says something about like Tai Yang is the door and Yang Ming is the door leaf or the part that it closes on, and Shao Yang is like it's really weird, but we interpret it as Tai Yang opens to the exterior, Shao Yang is the pivot between, and Yang Ming opens to the interior. But then when it talks about cold damage, first of all, it's interesting because the chapter is actually talking about diseases due to heat, and it's kind of like heat turns into cold, and then you have this cold damage. But then it says like on the first day of cold damage, Tai Yang is affected. It lists some symptoms. On the second day of cold damage, Yang Ming is affected, and on the third day of cold damage, Shao Yang is affected. So it has this day one, day two, day three,
right? And the penetration.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the difference between what's the physiological depth of the channels versus what's the order in which cold damage penetrates the six levels.
I think this is something that like I don't hear people talk about, where it's like, you know, when you read the Nei Jing or like the Bible, so the Nei Jing is telling you how we're the organism. It's telling you how the organism lives, right? It's like, oh, the Tai Yang is the when the wind blows around the mountain, the Tai Yang gets it, right? But that does not mean when you treat that you treat the Tai Yang kind of thing. Like there's maybe a different order of operations when you are using the body as a third party energetically than how it is described as just an organism living. Like the Nei Jing for me is like, most of it is very National Geographic, right? You've got David Attenborough sitting there and he's like, this is how the cold moves around. It goes from point A to point B. But then you have to take into consideration timing and the penetration level. When you're treating the person, you might do it in a reverse order, or you might go to that pivot thing. This is like why maybe like if you see those books and they're like, stage one wind attack, Guizhi Tong, and it includes Sanjiao 5. And it's like, the fuck for? And it's like, oh, well, maybe you actually have to start from the pivot to push it out a specific way.
So do you have a theory on why those two are different?
No,
why is it when we read Wang Juyi, he says it one way, but when we read Shang Hanlun, it's another way?
Oh, so I like literally, I think this is just like the people describing it or describing it their way. Like I think like maybe is one more right than the other? Sure, but is it like is the whole process of this refining it through the millennia? Yeah,
because it's interesting because like when you talk about Shang Hanlun six levels, it says that like when you think about a principal pattern diagnosis, Tai Yang is an exterior condition, Yang Ming is an interior condition, and Xiao Yang is half interior, half exterior. So it's like why is the half exterior? Why does it come third? And so when I was like trying to look this up, I like came across this weird thing that when it talks about like day one, day two, day three, it says on the first day, Tai Yang is affected. And then some commentators say, oh, Tai Yang governs the exterior, so that's why it's hit on the first day. And then it says on the second day, Yang Ming is affected because Yang Ming governs the flesh.
Sure.
And it's like, okay, so it goes from the exterior to the flesh. And then in this Unshul translation, it says, on the third day, Xiao Yang is affected. And his translation, he says, the Xiao Yang governs the gallbladder. But then he has a footnote that says there are certain editions of the Nei Jing where it says this is written because the Xiao Yang affects the bones. And this is a little bit weird because normally you say that the kidney governs the bones, but there are other passages in the Ling Shu where it says the Xiao Yang affects diseases of the bone.
Sure.
And like if the bones dot or needle the pivot and things like that.
Right.
So what I kind of started thinking of is this isn't actually penetration through the channels. It's actually cold pathogen is going from the exterior, like the level of the skin and the body hair. Then on the second day, it goes to the level of the flesh. Then
right,
on the third day, it goes to the level of the bone. And it's just that those channels are associated with those tissues.
Yeah, like a bullet instead of cold.
Yeah, so that was a thought I had. But I was also like, I would not publish this as fact in a textbook.
I would be careful publishing that.
This is just like a weird theory I had reading those things. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, so personally, the way that I think about it is like, to me, the Xiao Yang, I try to get away from the idea that it's like a gallbladder, an organ, or like even the meridian.
Yeah.
To me, Xiao Yang, and especially like trying to treat Xiao Yang syndrome is what kind of gave me this idea. Is like, it seems like, you know, we think that source qi must move through the Xiaoyang, right? Through the Sanjiao. And so if the source qi, which is created in wherever, can get to every source point, right? So there's already an infrastructure in our mind or in our body that is bigger than the Sanjiao meridian, right? So we know the Sanjiao meridian, it's this line, right?
Yeah.
But if the kidneys or whoever can make the source qi, and then the qi via the Sanjiao can get to every source point, there must be this network, right? That we don't have like a physical needle that can get a hold of it.
Oh, so like there's some irrigation ditches that we can't access with needles.
So, yeah. Right. So like the meridians that we learn that we treat, that the points are on, maybe those are like the ones that can be interacted with within our dimension. I don't know the word for it, but like I can stick a needle in my arm and I can hit the large intestine point, right? But maybe just like spitballing here that there's some infrastructure in there that like is energetic, spiritual, whatever. So to me, the Shaoyang as a whole, so the gallbladder and the Sanjiao, is kind of like the ventilation system in your body, right? It's like the HVAC.
Okay.
And so it goes everywhere regardless, right? It like literally passes through every room in your house, through every structure. And we see the vents. We know they're there, right? And when it's hot outside, it cools. And when it's cold outside, it heats. This kind of thing, right? And to me, that's what the gallbladder does. The gallbladder and the Sanjiao, those are its functions. And so maybe when I read those passages from the Neijing, the way I interpret it is, so cold hits the exterior, it begins to sink. And then that cold, the xie qi, the pathogen, it can disseminate to other areas of the body that don't necessarily make sense because it can take advantage of that infrastructure that we don't necessarily.
So it's not just like penetrating through the levels. It like accesses a distribution network that it can go different places
That's the way I think about it. And that's the way that it makes sense to me when we think about people with like early stages or even late stages and you're using intermediate meridians to take care of.
All right. So spoiler alert. I haven't eaten a lot today, so I'm pretty tipsy.
He's going to start slurring, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm pretty tipsy at this point, so if I stop making sense, that's why. That's the thing. I went to symposium, and I had to, like, explain that I have a podcast, and I'd have to be like, you know that podcast, Geological? This is, like, the opposite of that. Like, we are not being professional at all. So
thank fucking God. I love his podcast, by the way, but like we need an unprofessional one.
Yeah, so this is the very unprofessional podcast where we're drinking. Are you on bourbon right now? Or are you still on scotch?
No, I'm on President's Choice. I'm on like glass too.
And oh yeah, you're on the Old Forester. Okay. Yeah. So I feel like this might have been you at school that said, like there's in the Neijing where in chapter 8 of the Suwen when it talks about the different government offices, it says the Sanjiao holds the office of the sluices or the irrigation ditches, and it governs water, like water regulation. And I feel like it might have been you who said, like, that's not literally water. It doesn't actually regulate fluids. It's just that this is a metaphor for qi. Like, a lot of times when we talk about qi, we talk about the Jingbuo are like rivers or seas. And so when it says the Sanjiao governs those water passages, it's actually talking about governing source qi, not literal fluids.
Right.
Is that you? Do you still agree with that?
Yeah, that's one that I still agree with of the many things that I said during school that I've changed in my mind. That's one where I'm like, so I think when we're young in this medicine, we're very, we're looking for very tangible ideas to hold on to. And I still to this day, I don't believe that Sanjiao commands water. But I would say that the way that a dam commands water, that's the way the Sanjiao does it. So you can, so like if you think, for instance, Fulio, what is it? Kidney 7.
Kidney 7, the name is Fulio, returning Fulio. Current. So it's like tonifying kidney yang to steam the fluids back up to the kidney.
So that's one where I'm like, you're using the infrastructure of the kidney meridian, that qi, that heat. I think you're like, you see water in a place and you're like, no, not in my house. And you want to send it somewhere. That point actually does that thing, right? Or the kidney, the Shaoyan, that can command water. When I think of the way Sanjiao commands water from the exterior, it does look like it. Like if we have people with edema or water in the wrong place, this is something that we can use. But I think it's utilizing the infrastructure, the bed of the river instead of the water itself.
So is that like by regulating source qi, it's able to regulate the water?
Right. Okay. So I think it's like if you can command one to move, you open what was blocked or maybe it just like follows it, this kind of thing.
And I feel like that's kind of hard to parse out because it's like we have points on the Sanjiao channel, but when it comes to the three yang channels on the arm.
Right.
Those channels are actually not related to the organ. So it's kind of like you could look at the Sanjiao channel and be like, there's not a whole lot of regulating water here. Maybe Sanjiao 5 or Sanjiao 6. There's not a whole lot of regulating water here.
Right.
But it's also like none of the channels on the arm actually regulate their organs. So it's hard to tell.
And that's part of my argument. It's like, it's, you know, like, I don't want to blame white people, but it's white people who like named them the organ name. Like, I know this is large intestine because like, the colonizers. And so I think that this is why it's important to really try to extrapolate the ideas like the hand yang ming.
So right? like the difference between the channels and the organs.
Sure. Right.
And that's, I feel like that was one of the disagreements I had with Machioche when he was talking about these six channels. He's like, I think when it said this in the Neijing, it was actually talking about the organs, not the channels. Like, no, when it says Han Xiaoyang, it's talking about the channel. Like, you don't refer to the organs as Xiaoyang. So
I'm like, large intestine 11 never makes me shit my pants, but stomach 37 makes me shit my pants. Like, this kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's an interesting, like actually when you read in Deadman, he will straight up say there are no points on the large intestine channel that treat constipation. If you want to treat constipation, you got to use stomach 25 or stomach 37. There are actually no points on the channel that treat the organ.
And then they go back to the drawing and they're like, and we're going to add a little divergent.
Yeah.
We're just going to add a little tract in there.
Spleen 21 on the Xiaoyang channel.
God damn it. This is one that I would have fucking changed. So yes, it is true. I do not think, maybe even still to this day, and maybe it's just the rebel in me, I still don't know that I believe the reason that spleen 21 is on the spleen channel is literally because you can feel excess qi in the spleen pulse and deficient qi in the heart pulse, and you can needle spleen 21 and you can change that.
Oh, you're talking about clearing a block between the channels and the lung, large intestine, spleen, heart. Yeah.
I'll buy it for that, but I think it's very interesting. I'm still argumentative that the spleen governs the limbs, but I'm like not saying that I'm right here. Like I know that I'm wrong. It just upsets me.
Like it would be really convenient. Like if you just looked at the drawing, it would be really convenient if it went from like spleen 20 to lung 1. It would be like, it would make so much more sense.
Yeah, yeah. And they knew more than me because they like, you know, 10,000 years ago, they were like meditating and shit and felt this and I know that they're right. This is just me being angry. So I'll concede on that one.
Speaking of clearing blocks, this is one that came up recently because I was looking at J.R. Worsley's entry exit points. And I was previously not aware that this was just a J.R. Worsley thing.
Yeah.
But I was like looking at channel pathways and the way they're described in the Ling Shu, and they do not actually match up with the entry exit points that we learned in school. Like when you talk about, I think he says that it goes lung 7 to LI4, but in the Ling Shu, it actually says lung 7 to LI1, or the big one was going from SI to UB, that it's actually SI18. There's a branch that goes to UB1, but they have the entry exit points as SI19 to UB1.
So my argument for this is actually, like, although I don't want to agree with Worsley whatsoever, like, this is one where I'll give him, like, it gets clinical results, so I can't argue it too much. The way that my mind makes sense of this is, again, there must be a network that we cannot access with needling, right? That we can't get a hold of in like our dimension or whatever. And I believe that those so sensitive, energetic people in ancient times defined this. And I bet they're correct. And maybe the way that we just influence it are those points. Like if we already believe in distal needling, right? For some, like if the ankle's going to make my neck feel better, then like going back one point to clear the block, like I'm fine with it.
Yeah, because that was the only thing I could think of is that like when you look at the diagrams, like the diagrams in Deadman are based off of what's written in the Ling Shu. When you look at the diagram, it looks like you would go SI18 to UB1. But when you do J.R. Worsley clearing blocks, it's SI19. And the only thing I can think of is clinically it works. If there's no logic behind it, like at least empirically, like you can take the pulse, you can needle the points and the pulse changes. That's what matters. Like
more times than not, I've like felt that block and done UB2 and it clears it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, when man tries to say that we understand it, I think that's where the actual issue is. But for some reason, we're like, the thing that makes me happy is like, I'm getting a tangible, reproducible thing that I can identify, and then it leads me logically to a conclusion and that there's a good outcome for. So I'm like extremely happy for that, but it doesn't mean that I understand it.
Yeah, because I feel like that's even the thing when you talk about like when they say CVGV blocks, it's like sometimes terms of like, I don't feel like needling Ren 1. I'm just going to needle Ren 2.
Sure.
And it still works. So.
Right. Yeah, I would say that there's a massive like 99% of this medicine where I'm like, I don't fucking know what's going on. I can't tell you. I don't feel shit. I don't have understanding of. But there's clinically reproducible things that make people happy.
And I guess what's your feeling on that about it's like, should there always be a theoretical explanation, or is it okay to just be like, it fucking works in clinic. It's an empirical point. Let's just go with that. Like, does it need to have a theory?
I like, unfortunately, I don't think you can argue it. It's like, for my pretentiousness, I have the level that I think that I understand things and they make sense to me. And I like those a lot. Like, that's really positive to me. But to some extent, like, some dumb motherfucker is going to needle spleen 6 and liver cheese going to move by accident. And it's just going to make them look good. And that's actually great because the patient gets better.
Yeah, I guess in my academic mind, it should be like the theory comes first and we base our clinical treatments off of that. But in the real world, what actually happens is people did clinical treatments and based on those results, they developed the theory.
Right.
Oh, shit. I thought of something and then I just forgot it.
I like this fun theory talk, though. This is good stuff.
Shit. There was something I thought of like 20 seconds ago. I should have written it down. Do you think the liver is on the left or the liver is on the right?
Like the physical liver?
Physical or energetic?
I think the physical liver is on the right. I think you have two meridians. I don't think there's a spiritual liver on the left, but I think that your left meridian can have a problem, and I don't know if you needle the right side to fix that. So I just needle both.
Are you buzzing, or is that
me? It's me,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay, it was like, what's going on here?
Hang on, I'm on a podcast and I can't hear you, so I'll call you back in a little bit. It's Robert.
Oh, shit. If somebody has a peg leg, could you needle their peg leg and energetically it would still work?
You've had people on this podcast that I seriously think would needle the peg leg. But I can see some people doing some woo-woo on it and they're like really thinking something's going to happen. And, you know, maybe I'm just dumb and not spiritual enough, but I'm not doing woo-woo on the peg.
I feel like there was a Dr. House episode about that. But I feel like there's a lot of Japanese people who are like, oh, we palpate the liver on the left. And right. There are actually classical things about in the Nanjing, it does say, like, if there's a problem in the liver, you can feel tenderness to the left of the umbilicus. Sure. Sometimes when we talk about, like, Chai Hu versus Sheng Ma, it will say, like, the liver rises on the left, whereas the spleen rises on the right. And I've always kind of thought that, like, whose left are we talking about? When we say the liver is on the left, do we mean the patient's left? Or do we mean that, like, if you have a patient on the table and you're standing over them, it's like my left is your right.
I want you to really concentrate on their non-physical liver side and then slowly give them Sheng Ma, just like dropper by dropper, and see what happens.
Because it's like, if you think about the five elements, instead of like going along the Sheng cycle, if you think about it in terms of the four directions where earth is in the middle.
Yeah.
Fire is above because, you know, in China, when they drew their maps, south was at the top.
The
sage faces south. So it's like fire is above and water is below the north and south. And it's like, if you are say you are lying flat on your back on the ground with your heart facing south and your kidney facing north, then it's like your liver would be on the east.
So
which is my right, but your left.
I think you answered your question is when in school they say in the anatomical position, and whenever you read anything in Chinese medicine, you have to take into context that it's in the sage position. The position of the sage.
Because I like tried to come up with that argument, but then I was like, well, if you're lying like face down, then east and west are reversed for right and left. So I don't know if that actually makes sense, but I didn't know if you ever think about like, is the liver on the left or is the liver on the right?
Yeah, I think you just treat them both.
Is abdominal palpation actually a thing?
I think it is, yeah. It's not a thing that I do or anything that I know about, but I think that that's legitimately a thing. I think this is like, you know, I was like quasi in art school at one point in my life. And it's like, you do a whole bunch of art classes to figure out which media you're like most romanticized with. And you have like painters and sculptors and people that want to like piss on gold urinals. And, this is what that is, right? You have the people that like really look at the tongue. They're like really focused on the tongue. And then the pulse people and the abdomen people.
Who was the urinal guy? Was that Duchamp? There was some guy,
who
signed his name on urinal.
And I cannot stand Duchamp for that exact reason. He's just making fun of humanity as a whole.
It's like he was like a professional troll and called it art.
He was a troll. he should be renamed Duchamp.
Speaking of right and left and the liver, this was I was talking to Zach.
Are you so obsessed with the liver because you're such a liver? Is that the deal here?
No. Japanese people have very specifically told me I have a lung constitution, so... I'm a lung person, not a liver.
It's because you have hair, right? You have hair.
Because I have body hair. So is everybody from Persia a metal constitution because they have the body hair?
I think there's like a equal distribution of the unequal distribution of elements equally distributed.
Is everybody in California a fire constitution because they live next to the sun, whereas everybody in Kentucky is an earth constitution because they drink bourbon and eat Kentucky Fried Chicken?
No.
And live in a damp environment.
I think it's like we see a lot of earth people because they care, and they marry a lot of wood people, so they send them in. And we don't see a lot of water people because they're scared. And we don't see a lot of fire people because they're either, or we see a lot because they're either too rich, or we don't see a lot of them because they're too poor. I mean, I think there's a philosophical reason behind all that.
So I was talking to Zach Louis.
Yeah.
And because I was making some point about how if you want to like troll your teachers, like if you're in school and you want to troll your clinical supervisor, ask them what's the difference between a thin pulse and a thready pulse. Because I've had this happen before where like somebody asked a teacher.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know you're talking about.
Like they asked them, and she went on this like 10-minute explanation about the different the subtle differences between the thin and the thready pulse. And I was like, no, they're actually just different translations of shimai. It's like they're right. The exact same pulse. It's just different books translate them differently. So I was talking to Zach, and he said, yeah, one of the things I like to do to troll my students is ask them about left and right for yin and yang, which is yin and which is yang, left versus right. And according to the Taoists, left is yang and right is yin. But people get confused about that because the pulse is the opposite. That usually when we take the right pulse, that's the yang pulse. And we take the left pulse, that's the yin pulse. But technically, it's the opposite.
But that's like the way the data is coming out is reversed.
Yeah. So it's kind of this interesting thing where like I feel like I don't know if we talk about this a lot, but I feel like in the body, yin and yang are very often switched. And so that's an example of that, is that normally it's like if you are the sage facing south, then the east is the direction of the rising sun. That's yang. West is the direction of the setting sun. That's yin. So it makes sense that yang is on the left. If you're facing south, yang is on the left and yin is on the right. But then we have this saying in the Nanjing where it's the right kidney that holds the Ming Men fire and the left kidney holds the true essence. And so that's why right is yang and left is yin. And I feel like this comes up a lot where the two are switched. For example, the front of the body is yin and the back of the body is yang. But front mu points treat yang diseases like excess and heat, whereas back shu points treat yin diseases like deficiency and cold. So a lot of times it gets switched. Or if we talk about the five shu transport points.
But that's a completely different system.
It's a completely different system, but
see, because you're moving from subject to subject without like the maybe like the divergent channel being a part of it, and so I think that, yeah, like I totally agree with you, but there's a lot going on there.
But like when we talk about the five shu points, if we accept that the yuan source point is part of the five shu system, it's like on yin channels there are five shu transport points, but on yang channels there are six,
right?
Because the yuan source point is different. But even numbers are yin and odd numbers are yang. So it's like the opposite.
You just have to remember every single rule.
What's every single rule?
You have to remember every single rule, like that six is a yang number or whatever. And the left kidney is zhuo gui. Like you got to remember all these things.
But anyway, I think this is an interesting thing where it's like, young, it's like, it's almost like you can say, like Tauntaun would say this a lot, where it's like, you can justify anything if you make enough connections, like with the five elements and yin and yang. It's like,
right.
Oh, yes, the opposite, because yin turns into yang and yang turns into yin. And
it's the OG bullshit.
And it's like you can go around the five elements enough times that anything is connected to anything.
I agree with that. Because I think like all of these things that have been written have been a clinical observation, right? And so they have to make sense of it somehow.
So is it they're just molding the theory to fit their clinical observations?
Yeah, like 100%, absolutely. No, like nobody throughout any of the era except maybe like six people have understood how this shit exactly works. And whenever we see something, we just make the most relevant observation for it. Look, I want to be the Taoist that sits at the mountain and like I fucking know why the leaf falls. Like I want to understand it all, but I like I also don't know if like the hard drive in my head can like contain that type of knowledge. So the fact that I can make like a headache go away, that might be good enough for me at the end of the day if I can reproduce it.
I feel like I'm too woozy to say anything else intelligent.
Oh no, baby, keep going. You're getting better. The more you drink, the deeper you go.
It's like, I feel like I've only thrown up from drinking a limited amount of times in my life, but all but one of them involved you.
That's the trailer for the episode. That's literally, please, if you don't use that as the trailer, I will be offended.
I feel like this is also a thing where I have like hours and hours of podcast material recorded with you, but I never bothered to go through and edit it because like, after 3 hours, I was so drunk, I figured it was like not worth publishing anyway. So I feel like we might be getting to that point.
I just use these as attempts to spend time with you.
We talked about the Order of the Six Channels. We talked about Spleen 21.
I love that Xiaoyang shit you brought up. You know I'm hot for that channel.
Do you use the Xiaoyang channel a lot? I feel like I don't use it a whole lot other than like Sanjiao 5, Sanjiao 6, maybe Sanjiao 4.
I mean, I use the Sanjiao. I'm going to call it Xiaoyang because I always use both.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I feel like I use them only when they're indicated to me, but I feel like that means multiple times a day. Like, yeah, like I use it a lot.
Yeah.
But I use like kidney a lot. I use them all. I think that I have a wide repository of points that I use, but I definitely am one of those people where I use like only 100 points. Like I'm trying to think of a point that I never use. I rarely use extra points. I rarely use like Ren point. I rarely use extraordinary vessel points. I'm pretty much an antique kind of person. I bet I use every antique point daily.
Yeah, because that was the thing. Like, I once talked to one of our five element teachers, and he was kind of like, most practitioners only use like 40 to 50 points.
Right.
Whereas I use like 200 points. Like, he's one of those, like, I'm going to use Stomach 22 because it has this name.
That's cool.
But yeah, I feel like the only times I use Sanjiao points are like in combination with gallbladder points. So it's like GB34 Sanjiao 6 or GB40 Sanjiao 5. I'm not sure I use a whole lot of other Sanjiao points.
And I mean, maybe I'm wrong because that just makes sense to me. But it's like, you know, if I'm doing foot Xiaoyin, I'm doing arm Xiaoyin. But I'm also doing arm Taiyin. Like, those are the weird inconsistencies that I think are regular for me because they work in my mind. And like, let me back up. Let me preface that with like, I just subscribe to the 4-point needle technique. So I will like, I will just do that.
Yeah.
And then I will modify it with same channel, you know, different differentiation. So it's like, if I feel like I need to put more than 8 points needled on the person, I might add a couple more Xiaoyang points, this type of thing.
Okay. But not like my thumb is a mirror image for my nose, and therefore
there's parts of the imaging that I like I believe in, and it maybe not even believe in. There's parts of the imaging that I can like get to work for me, and there's parts of the imaging that I can't get to work for me.
Do you feel like the liver is overused?
I feel like the liver is overused in acupuncture, but I also feel like the liver is overused in our contemporary modern lives. So I don't know that it is like, it's a wrong thing. Like I definitely think that there are practitioners out there who just do 10 points on every person, and they see 100 people and it works for 10, and those 10, you know, 5 years later, they have 200 people that love them and come and see them every week. Yeah. I think that there's a valuable lesson to be learned in there. Do I think it's correct? No. I'm pretentiously thinking that you need to diagnose in a very specific way, and you can only treat in a specific way. And if you don't, you're an idiot. But obviously, there's fucking dumb acupuncturists who are making a ton more money than I am. So.
Or I guess, do you think four gates is overused? I guess that's where I was going. Where it's no.
Four gates is fucking dumb.
It's like there are certain things I like it for, especially if there's issues in the head. But as we were having Sanjiao conversations, I was like, I like GB34 Sanjiao 6 or GB40 Sanjiao 5 a lot more than I like Liver 3 Li 4.
Yeah, I'm like. So, you know, Americans love vitamins, right? And to me, vitamins are one of these things, like, if you're missing it, you need it. And if you're not missing it, you're fucking just eating a pill and for no reason. And yeah, so to me, there's a time and a place for the four gates. And I think that it's maybe like widely overused. In my personal practice, I have 100%. So I'm a less is more person. So I definitely on the weekly run into the people where I like put in four needles or six needles, and they're like, "Is that it? Like, there should be 100 needles." Yeah. And I'm like, "I'll fucking do Li4 just to make you happy." Or Yintang. I don't think Yintang does absolutely anything. And so I'm like, it's the Gansao of needles, right? And so I'm like, yeah, fucking here, the one between the eyes, be a unicorn. It's not going to, put it this way, it's not going to interfere with the shit that I think that I've done in my hallucination.
Okay, if we're talking about like weird TCM theories, tell me about your theory on Gansao, and then tell me about your theory on Yintang.
Here's my theory on Gansao.
You don't think it harmonizes?
So... harmonization. Okay, so I like one of my major things, so that people know, I like part of my background is I studied classical Chinese language in relation to poetry. And I was really lucky. I like lived in China, and I was really lucky that I had a teacher who was like, you really need to take into consideration what the world was like and what life was like back then before you can even understand the vocabulary.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that comes with me is that when I read things like the Neijing or the Nanjing, which, you know, I'm like fucking just, I only, the Nanjing is it for me. That gives me the biggest hard on. It's a very small hard on, but it's very hard. And so my thing is that if we're going to take into consideration this data that we're reading, we have to also have the context of the time in which it was made. And there are specific things like fresh water was rare, and you might need to do antimicrobial processes. So personally for me, Gansao is in every fucking formula because it's antimicrobial, but does not have a direct temperature. So for instance, Huang Lian is incredibly antimicrobial, but makes a formula very cold. Whereas Gansao has an antimicrobial property, and it doesn't necessarily make you shit your brains out. Might blow your head off with the high blood pressure, but maybe it's like safer to give more people. So when water was poison, I can see where they would just give everybody a specific herb.
But you don't think that boiling the water had that effect?
I think that like fires weren't consistent back then. And so that there's for me, you have to like look in between the lines and find these subtleties. And there might be some things that don't make sense in contemporary time. We don't have to boil Mu Li for 3 hours anymore because when I buy it from Meiwei, it comes crushed up. Like the rule of when you use a flower, use more, or a lighter herb, use more, a heavier herb, use less. I mean, that's density, right?
Yeah.
Like we understand physics a little bit better now. And if I can crush something with a fucking machine press, I might be able to utilize more of the medicinal part of it. I still prescribe based on the traditional way because I also am like, I'm a fucking Neanderthal. I might be getting this wrong, but that's my personal opinion. So yeah, if I write a prescription for you, it will not include Gonsal. And that might be because I'm a hipster.
Because I feel like that's the thing that Zach would talk about too. Is like, you have to think of this as like, is this written from a Taoist point of view or a Confucian point of view?
Right.
Or like,
that's
like,
a huge, yeah, that's a huge
like
thing.
What metaphors are we using at the time? Do you think that the Nanjing is superior to the Neijing?
I think that if you want to have a working understanding of the medicine, at least to achieve clinical relevance, you have to understand, or at least like you have to go through both of them. But personally, I think that I'm a poster child for the Nanjing.
I'm not sure about this, but this might have been like in the introduction of the Unshul translation where he's like, the Neijing was kind of like the rough draft. It's like when they didn't quite know what was going on with Chinese medicine, so they just wrote the Neijing. By the time they got to the Nanjing, it's like they knew what was going on, like because it's like the final draft. So if there's any if there's ever any like a disconnect between the two, you should go with the Nanjing.
So like Marvel, like I love Marvel, love me a comic book movie. The Neijing for me is like early Iron Man movies where everything was really good because they had no budget. But then the Nanjing came in and it kind of like they had like, so it was a government edict, right? And so they were like, no, we have money and we want to really make this shit good. And so that was where you have like Thanos and all that whole part where we're getting money. We're getting the Russo brothers. Everything's like fucking great. And then maybe the Taiping era was when they went to hell with like Loki and, you know, all the contemporary stuff.
So what about Yintang? I don't know if Yintang does anything, but I feel like it's something it's really easy to tell your patients like, oh yeah, we're opening your third eye.
I'm really angry at a lot of points. And it's,
you're angry at points. Tell me more about this.
I'm angry at contemporary modern society and some points. So like I have the people that come in and they're like, I was on a cruise and I was nauseous and they did pericardium 6 and my nausea went away. Can you do this? And I'm like, yeah, but the diagnosis is different. So there's some points where I'm like, large intestine 4, it ain't going to do every headache. And if you want the medicine to be effective, you actually have to like hit the point that's indicated. Like that turns out to be a thing. Like it's a lock and key and your body is missing a puzzle piece and you have to actually figure out which puzzle piece that is. And if you don't, you're going to end up doing 10 fucking needles or more that don't do a goddamn thing. So Yintang is one for me where I'm like, so skeptical of the benefit of it because I'm like, everybody that I do it to tells me that they just loved it and they were relaxed. But I'm like, you were on a heated table and I was playing Duder. Like, you were going to be relaxed. I'm just extremely skeptical of it. And I have trouble with points that aren't on channels. And it's on the Ren channel. That's fine. But it's not indicated as a Ren point, so...
Well, I was going to say that's interesting because I've had like some people who really love Yintang and some people who really hate Yintang. They're like, it gives me a headache. But also it's like, that's why I'm not really into auricular because it's like, it's not on a channel. Like, I don't know how to think about this because it's not on a channel.
Everybody else in our practice does auricular and everybody loves it. And the patients get legitimate great results. And I'm not going to say I've done Nada and people get real phenomenal. I'm like currently doing it and people get great results, but I'm like, my mind can't wrap itself around it if it's not on a channel with some type of theory behind it. So maybe it just, this is practitioner preference and it just makes me angry. And it's because I'm a little man.
What other points make you angry? Are there any herbs that make you angry or any herbs that make you excited?
Herbs.
Are
that
you,
make
are you
me
like
angry?
Sumu? Nobody uses sumu enough. I need to.
I use sumu today. I literally fucking filled sumu today. Herbs that make me angry. I think herbs that make me angry are like when liver people just use liver herbs on people that don't necessarily indicate for liver patterns, but then they still get great results and it pisses me off. I'm looking at Karen. She just prescribes everybody a version of Xiaoyasan. She like takes Xiaoyasan and modifies it. It's like Xiaoyasan plus Guipitong, but she gets great fucking results with it. It just makes me so angry.
Okay, so like a formula that makes me angry is
hashtag control issues
is Sichuan Dabutong. Like I feel like that's a
of course you're gonna tonify when it's all those herbs.
It's like I feel like that's the formula you use when, like, you're dumb.
You don't know what else to do. You have no fucking clue. Yeah, use that one.
And then I used it, and it worked, and I was so angry that it worked. Like, this, like,
you know, I made one of these formulas that I hate so much.
Like, the skinny woman got pregnant off of Sichuan Dabutang, and it made me so angry.
See, that's when I tell people even an idiot can move chi, right? It's like you accidentally tipped her over the edge. Yeah, I like totally wrote a formula that I filled for a lot of people, and I fucking just hate it now. God, it's a so like when I toyed with the idea of getting the doctorate, which I like went to the first weekend of, and then I was like, "Fuck all you."
Well, I feel like you are the one who is like, "I'm just going to give Shu Di Huang and Huang Qi to everybody."
Yeah, that's the one. That's the fucking one.
Because you're like, "Oh, it tonifies Qi, tonifies blood, must be good for something."
So I like went to the first weekend of the doctoral thing, and I was like, "This is just for letters after your name, and I'm so above this, I'm never going back." But they prepped you with, you're going to have to do a capstone, like a research thing to defend. And so I went to Tan Tan and I was like, what's the most arcane, crazy herb book? So insane that nobody would ever translate it. And he gave it to me and I translated it. And it was essentially this hipster back in the 200s AD making fun of Zhang Junjing. And he essentially he never wrote the formula, but he defined, like, of course Guipi Tong's going to work because it has this, this, and this. And of course Tian Wang Bu Xin Dan is going to work because it has this, this, and this. And so I was working with a person with diabetes. And so I, like, built this formula based on his principles, right? So this was not me making this formula. It was like I just extrapolated the data that he put out, came up with this formula, and fuck, it nails the shit out of an A1C. I won't say to people that it treats diabetes, but it'll fucking roll an A1C down, right? And to me, what happens is if somebody is like, maybe their metabolic activity is in trouble, then their body can't govern a bunch of other things, right? Like, you have a limited amount of energy and your body is spending so much resource on maybe trying to treat your own diabetes that your foot gets a neuropathy or your eyes stop working or you're tired all the time, right? And so I made this kind of like blanket A1C formula out of this stuff. And I was so sick and tired. I'm in Kentucky. It's a bunch of fat people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm so sick and tired of hearing people that come in to me like, I got diabetes. And so I like started like blind describing it, and everybody got fucking better. And I'm like, God damn it. It's literally just these fucking two fucking herbs just making everybody better. So that one just pisses me off. And yes, if anybody emails me, I'll just send you the formula. It's great for A1C. It just rocks its fucking world.
I really got to pee. I'll be right back.
Have a great one.
Formulas that make you angry. What do you think about Gan Mao Ling and Xiang Su San?
So when you say Gan Mao Ling, you mean pills?
Yeah, I feel like, because I've heard a lot of people say like, oh, I just give Gan Mao Ling because that's what they give in China. And like, do Chinese doctors give it in China? Or is that just like your grandma in China who knows nothing about Chinese medicine prescribes this?
Like, and I got a fake PhD in China. They don't only prescribe Gan Mao Ling.
And I feel like there's no standard Gan Mao Ling. It's just like,
right,
there's a lot of different things. Maybe it has acetaminophen in it. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's herbs.
Right.
Nobody can actually tell me what's the treatment principle behind.
I mean, that's Gan my Mao largest Ling. Issue with the pills is like, in Chengdu, we went to the pill manufacturer and I watched them, like, they're like, oh yeah, we use the finest quality Tang Arzi and the finest quality Baijiu, and then we use the finest quality diphenhydramine. We just sprinkle it in there. And so I'm not a pro China government. I like love classical China. Let's just put it that way. And I'm extremely skeptical. We have the like horrible capitalistic view over here. Over there, they're making up for it. And so I'm like adamantly against the pills that are produced over there because you do not know what is in them. Like when I first moved out to California, I went and got Shui Zhe'an, like a sleeping, like a help you fall asleep thing, and it had a Russian tranquilizer in it because the company had built a tranquilizer, like cooked it up for the Russians, like drugs, and then the Russians didn't want it, and so they're like, oh, just fucking put it in the Shwedan. It worked phenomenally. It was the best sleep I've ever had in my life, but it's like, I'm super skeptical of the pills for that reason. The gonmaling thing, I really believe that that's like a during flu season, that might work for 20% of people. And that's great. If somebody comes in and they're like, I got all these cold symptoms, and you give them acupuncture and send them home with some gonmaling, maybe it worked, maybe the acupuncture worked, maybe it was 50-50. If you want to prescribe that way, that's completely fine. I'm like too much of a pretentious dickhead for that. I like have to have a specific reason for the dosage and the use of exact herbs.
And it's kind of like when I ask people about gonmaling, they can never explain to me what pattern it's actually treating.
Right, because it's not for a pattern. It's a modern formula. Modern formulas aren't for patterns. They're for clinical observations. If you're practicing traditional Chinese medicine, you're like, you're blanket diagnosing Yin Xiao Sun, but maybe that's okay. But if you're using gonmaling, it's like, you know, this is just something like, in modern times, we see that XYZ tends up treating 30% of common cold.
The other interesting one that came up alongside gonmaling was Xiangsu San or Jiawei Xiangsu San, where I had a Chinese student who was like, this is what we prescribe in China. Why does nobody prescribe this? And I went through the Bensky and read the commentary on it. And it was like, this formula was developed by people who thought that the Shanghan Lun, it's like, we don't have this extreme cold. We don't need to have this extreme of promoting sweating. So let's just kind of mildly release the exterior and regulate qi. And I feel like that actually applies to most of the modern colds that we have. But no, people are always like, oh, we should use Guizhetong. Like every time somebody has a cold, let's use Guizhetong. It's like, why are people sleeping on Xiangsuzan?
And there's a whole book of people that told you, like, when you inappropriately treat with X, Y, and Z herbs, this is how you fix that. The guy who wrote the first book wrote the second book saying you people were fucking it up.
Do you treat a lot of common colds, I guess? Do people even come in?
I think we treat a ton of common colds. I would say that traditionally I will modify Xiangsu San. I will end up like, because we'll see a common cold with an emphasis on like rhinitis, like nasal issues. And so it's like, I'll do Xiangsu San and I'll like give an incredible dose of Baijiu, this type of thing.
Yeah, I feel like Jurso San is another one that people don't know that formula exists. And I was like, oh.
Jurso San is a gorgeous formula. Like, that shit's well written.
It stops cough. If they have a cough, give them the stop cough powder. Like, why are you making this so complicated? It's so easy to modify to the...
I think that back then, the people that got the cough, nowadays we're getting the cough for the different reason. Like, I treat people now with common cough from blood pressure medication, this type of thing, right? Or it's like they had the cough... they got the sequela of sickness, and then they had the cough after sickness. But
what are all these fucking airplanes going on?
I live next to an airport. Oh. I'm fucking poor. I live next to an airport.
But yeah, I feel like that's the thing. It's like the sequela of a wind attack. Jurso San. See, your cat's being nice. My cat's like biting my fingers right now.
Can you see him bothering the shit out of me?
Yeah, no, mine is like. I need more Meow Mix. Give me my Meow Mix.
What else do I want to say about Xiangsu San? Like, you know, Xiangsu San is one of those for me where it's like, I make that comment that like, even an idiot can move qi. I mean, that's what Xiangsu San does. Like, it's like this should be your first line of defense kind of thing, but it's also a tiny formula. And how do I say this? Like, so when I see people, especially for like chronic cough or a cough, they haven't just gotten the cough. So Xiangsu San, the native formula, it might be used for like, oh, I got the cough. We're on day 3, right, of the cough, where a lot of the times people are like, oh, I'm coming to acupuncture because nothing else worked and it's been 3 months, right? Like the cough damaged some shit as it sank through all those fucking levels.
Is dry needling going to ruin our profession?
In my experience, personal experience, dry needling is only going to make our profession better.
Explain.
So in the first few years of practice, so I live in an area with, a good amount of population to ratio acupuncturists.
As in, it's not oversaturated where you are.
Yeah. So I don't live in an oversaturated market, but I definitely live in a, like, our city is a massive city for allopathic medicine. So we have like 16 hospitals and it's a massive, like, medical industrial complex. So we have a huge amount of PTs, both independent and in with the hospitals. And so we treat, or we have a lot of people that like also see chiropractors that even do dry needling. So in my experience, I was adamantly against dry needling years 1 through 3 as like, you know, this is, and not even that they're wrong, right? But like actually that like this is actually just going to take away business from me. So my personal understanding, and this could be wrong, is like, when I think about acupuncture, I think about maybe 8 distinct levels of treatment and maybe the last one being treat at the source of the pain kind of thing. So like if the person has a pain in their neck, you treat the distal end, right? That's like the way we start. And then if you fuck that up and you can't figure that out, like eight treatments later, you're like needling into the muscle. And that's dry needling to me. So a lot in the beginning of practice, what I was seeing was mysteriously people coming to me and they're like, so I've seen both. I've seen dry needling that saved people's lives, and that's great. Like, I'm glad that they found that person. But I've seen a lot of, hey, I had lateral epicondylitis and I got it dry needled and I got asthma, right? Yeah. Or I got neck pain. And they're like, you know, I was talking to my friend and they come and see you. And I was wondering, like, do you have any insight on this? And I'm like, it's very odd that they were treating a part of a channel that goes to where your pain is now. And maybe that's some Chinese medicine bullshit that I could like snake oil pedal towards anyone. But I do think that there's a lot of historical text written about inappropriate treatment. So in the beginning of treating, or the beginning of business, I was like adamantly against dry needling. And now that I'm like saturated with patients and comfortable financially, I'm like, actually, they should just like, they should treat the really easy stuff so that I don't have to. And they're going to fuck up a whole bunch of people. And then I'm going to be able to clean that mess up. And they're just actually, it's job opportunity for me. And I have never, like, I want to hate on some PTs. I really do. I've never run into a PT that did not illustrate to their patient that it is different than acupuncture. And acupuncture is a completely different thing and a completely viable thing that they should also maybe seek out. So, like, although I might not agree with what they're doing, like, so I don't hate the PTs, but maybe I hate the, like, medical industrial complex that was like, hey, chiropractic and acupuncture is taking away. We should, like, actually just invent something that does chiropractic and acupuncture and also steal their cupping and their gua sha. Because, you know, that's how I feel. Yeah. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I like nowadays I'm like, fuck no, let them fuck it up. Like they're either going to take care of the low hanging fruit or they're going to fuck something up and I'm going to have to treat it. And you know, I've got more expertise. So that's great.
Cause that was always kind of my thought where I feel like other people are like, oh, they're encroaching on our turf. But I'm like, I kind of feel like dry needling makes sense. Like if you have neck pain and somebody sticks needles in your neck and it makes it better,
stick it in your neck,
let them do it. And it's yeah. Kind of like, Like I had one student that like he was in the UFC. He was like he coached MMA fighters, and he was like, I'm just here because I want to be able to treat my fighters. And I'm like, that kind of makes sense. If you want to stick needles right. in someone's butt to treat their sciatica, yeah. Like
stick needles in the butt.
Do you really need to like go through 4 years of school to learn the Shanghan Lun and to learn and to like take classes on gynecology and shit like that? If somebody wants to like stick needles in your neck to treat a headache, let them do that.
Give them 6 weeks. Like I want to be personally, I want to be the sage on the mountain, like with the robes and the tea, and that's me. But like, there's a lot of people on the planet and a lot of people on the planet have ass pain. And if people can make their ass pain better, I'm like not upset about it. My whole argument for business, a lot of the times when I talk to prospective students or other acupuncturists is like the medicine, it's kind of fucking magic. If you do even a halfway decent job, you're actually just going to make business for yourself. Like you, Like, we don't advertise. We're like the poster child for that kind of strategy. And that might not be for someone in a saturated market, but like it works real well for us. I'm honest and I do what I think is a really good job for somebody. They get good results. They want me to stay open because we have a community here and people want to send us. So I'm like, fuck no. Like the monopoly on power is a thing that we found earlier in life is very disproportionately based. Like, we need competition. It makes us better people. If all of a sudden I can't treat a headache, I'm going to go read a fucking book and figure out how to treat a headache.
And I kind of feel like if you're threatened by dry needling, like, that's your own fucking fault. It's like just in terms of running a business, like, it's your job to differentiate yourself.
Right.
From what else is going on. And it's like maybe it's time that we need to like stop calling ourselves acupuncturists and start calling ourselves practitioners of traditional Chinese medicine, because we need to differentiate ourselves from, we don't just stick needles in your
neck.
We're just
not needle people.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, Andrew Huberman, I think, just came out with a thing where it's like, oh, acupuncture is good for fertility. It's like, can you do dry needling for fertility? Well, maybe take advantage of that and like actually differentiate yourself in the market. So,
yeah, you know, and that's a thing. And part of that is like the education part of it is a huge piece for me personally. And that's why I make the mistake of giving people, like the patients, my cell phone number. Like, while we've been talking, a lady was like, I treat her for spleen qi deficiency and I told her not to eat raw herbs, right? And she's like, cashews? ? And I'm like, this medicine is such a huge education. There's such a huge educational piece to it that, like, if I really want to integrate myself into a patient's life and actually augment their biochemistry, I had better do the education part, because them coming to see me once a week or once a month, like, that isn't going to do it on its own. That's what dry needling is for. Like, go get it in that case.
Yeah, I thought of something 3 minutes ago and now it's gone again.
God damn it, Nicholas. Get a fucking pen and paper.
I might be too drunk to continue this anymore.
No, we're doing great. I'm getting belligerent. This is good. You need to do a live one where you let people call in. You gotta do it. You gotta advertise it for a month.
Do you wanna do a live Q&A?
I wanna do it with you. Yeah, I'm hard for it. Like advertise it for a month and we'll sit down and it's gonna be a 2-hour thing on like a Sunday. And like give like everybody the opportunity, and we'll have the Facebook open and answer their questions.
Cause I might try to do a thing where I create like a private community. Like, it's like you gotta pay $8 a month to be part of this community, and maybe that can be like a bonus feature, like only people who pay the $8 a month.
Like, you're literally the smart one building the infrastructure of the online thing. I'm so upset that I don't have the knowledge base for it. Like, you're sitting on a gold mine, but there's a time component. Like, it's like takes so long to build it, but it's like so genius. It's so
especially because we're fucking rowing upstream. Like, it is
100% rowing upstream. But when it actually pays off, the payoff is going to be astronomical and logarithmic.
I lost my train of thought. What were you talking about?
I have no fucking clue. This is great.
Yeah, but I think it'll pay off eventually. But it, like, right now I'm like, why am I not selling more herb courses? And then I saw that like there are 500 people per year who take the herb national test. Like, oh,
yeah,
it's just like such a small market.
Do you do CEUs yet?
No, I've been kind of going back and forth on that, because that was originally my plan, was to get into CEUs and charge like a premium price for CEUs.
No, you should undercut everyone and do it in volume. I mean, that's my personal opinion. I mean,
I could also do that. I think it's like I have a bigger brand than everyone. It's like I have more subscribers than Elotus.
Your brand than everyone. Your fucking brand is so genius, because it's growing so organically is the thing.
But I've been kind of like going back and forth on that, because it's like I could charge money for CEUs, but if I just made like if I made an FCM1 course, it could be that I could make an FCM1 course and charge $30, but because I could sell that internationally, it would make more money than selling a CEU course for $300. So I'm kind of like not sure what to do about that.
I'm lubricated now.
Because I surprisingly sell a lot of herb courses to Europeans and Canadians.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like that surprised me, but it's like it's a wider market internationally. Whereas if I just did CEUs, I could only sell it to Americans.
Yeah. No, I'm like literally just like I'm so impressed with like the quality and everything. And I'm like, fuck, it's so good. Like I would never have time to do it, right? Or the knowledge base to actually do it. But it's like so good.
Oh, it's so fucking frustrating. Like I spent 2 months making a lung channel video.
The lung channel video is so good though. Or like whatever version I've seen on Facebook. It's so good.
And I guess here's another, this is more of a business question, but have you ever had to compromise between what you wanted to do and what actually makes money?
So the problem with me is that I will always choose with what I want to do. And it will be like thrust in my face why I was wrong.
Because that's the thing I was thinking about. Like they talk about this a lot with business things, YouTube, any kind of creative thing. It's like sometimes there's like a video that I want to make, which I think sounds really cool. Like I made a video on inverted menses because I thought it was a funny topic.
Yeah.
Nobody actually wants to watch that. Whereas what the market wants is show me point location for the gallbladder channel. And so I was kind of wondering if there's an acupuncture equivalent where you have to make some compromise between this is what I want to treat or this is the way I want to treat versus this is what the market wants. This is what people are willing to pay for.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, in order to make it have a monetary value, you've got to, because, you know, people listen to these things or search for these things because they're like, the person's got a headache. Like, what's the headache point? Like, you know, and they're always going to listen to like the bullshit, right? The person has neuropathy and I've been treating it this way, but this one guy said stomach 41, right? This thing. And so I think you have to bake in your like inverted menses. And I use Jue Mingzi and like XYZ, the shit that they actually want to buy. Move home to Kentucky. We can build such an empire. And I actually just don't want any money. Like I like don't even want a piece of it. I just want to see it fucking work. I'm like Emperor Palpatine. I just want to see it become.
Well, I was kind of thinking about that in terms of like I should move. Like there's this kind of this idea of the digital nomad where it's like I'm going to move to Thailand where the rent is like $100 a month,
right?
And then I can make money doing that. I was kind of like, that's kind of like what Kentucky is, where it's like I could move to
Kentucky where the
rent is $500 a month.
I'll tell you what, I will buy a piece of property and I will like charge you whatever the flat, whatever it is, no profit. You just come, but better yet, you should do it and own the principal. And it's so cheap. And it's like the way that I look at,
Jesus,
the way that I look at the market, it's like, this is a limited time in which shit's going to be cheap, right? It's going to be more expensive years down the road. But you're sitting on what I would call the eve of an empire. Just do it. Wherever you are, even if you don't come here, you just do it. And it's like the whole, because I'm like, I see the brilliance of American Dragon. I see it. It's so fucking brilliant. And logarithmically, there's going to be more acupuncturists and more herbalists. And if you make one that ties more of the aspects together, everybody is going to search. I have a patient with sore throat.
Yeah.
Do I need to do lung 10? And it's like so fucking genius because it's not tied together because you have a certain, but like as much as you want money, you have a certain aspect of you that wants to do the thing the right way. And that's the thing. That's it.
It's just going to take such a fucking long time.
It's so much work and so much long time. And that's the thing. But we live in the Renaissance. We just don't know it. We were at the beginning of the Renaissance and we can be Medicis.
But I feel like the payoff is going to be like 10 years from now when I'm...
There's no payoff. Yeah, the fucking payoff is way more than 10 years from now. But the payoff is like the, like, you know, when you start investing and you're like, I want $100,000 a year. And then at some point you're like, I'm good with $40,000 a year. That's actually what it is. That's a payoff.
I'm going to be a Chinese medicine doctor with an integrated clinic, and I'm going to help all the people. It's like,
fuck.
I'm going to rent one room and hope I can pay off my student loans.
You know, honestly, and you can put this in there, I take a paycheck of $1,200 and every other penny that's owed to me, I put into S&P 500 index funds. I really do. And it's owned by the clinic. I'm like, that's the whole game. Index funds. If the market tanks, I'm extremely sad, but that's why I buy real estate and bonds.
See, I feel like we're getting to the point where it's like, I'm so drunk, I'm not even going to like review this to see if it's usable.
You should review it. This is good stuff. This is great stuff. All the other people are so serious and good for them. That's great. But like, we got to balance it with Captain Crazy over here.
Yeah.
Karen's like, are you wasted? I'm like, I'm wasted.
I'm wasted.
Aurora was like, he's been talking forever. Aurora had like a whole play date and it's already over.
That's all I got.
Okay, baby. Let me know if we need to go over any other part again. I'm happy to do it. I'm free tomorrow.